Mary had a little lamb.
Her fleece was white as snow.
And everywhere that Mary went,
the lamb was sure to go.
Didn't want
to
go.
This is Marcy Schwartz and Jean Gershom interviewing for the second time, Jean Dickman, and it is May 4th, 2000. Mrs. Dickman, could we just go back a little bit where we were last time?
Sure.
And do some fill-ins before we catch up, okay?
Sure.
Could you please tell us your father's name and your mother's name?
My father's name was Samuel. My mother's name was Esther. Her maiden name was Smith.
And your siblings, what were their names?
I have three brothers, Al, Jules, and Harry, and three sisters, Dorothy, Serrata, and myself. I only had two sisters. I'm sorry.
And Dorothy and Serrata's married names?
Dorothy is Kaplow, K-A-P-L-O-W, and Serrata is Shapiro.
Your father's last name?
Baim. B-A-I-M.
Good for you. I don't know why, but I was thinking Dickman.
Bye, honey. Have a good game.
You had mentioned that you were young when your mother passed away. What was the cause of death?
Well, as I think I said last time, my sisters and I all have different ideas of what she died from, and I was sure that I must have heard from them, but I thought she died from a blood clot that went to her brain, that she was cutting green beans and cut her finger, and she must have bled profusely, and they know they took her to the hospital, and they were going, she developed gangrene, and it went, you know, up and down her arm, and they thought they were going to have to amputate a finger. Obviously today this would not have been a problem, but in those days they mustn't have had antibiotics or whatever they do for an infection, and then this blood clot went to her brain and she died, killed her instantly.
Quite easy to be a little girl.
Well, I was fortunate enough to have these two older sisters. Dorothy is 20 years older than I, and Serrata is 10 years older than I. The boys are in between.
Now, do they all live in Pittsburgh?
No, they all lived in, we all lived in Chicago.
Did you participate in any summer camps or extracurricular activities?
I did go to a campfire girls camp, I couldn't tell you what year, for 2 weeks, and I hated it, just hated it. I was not an outdoor girl, and I never did any outdoor sports. You know, jump rope, hopscotch, the usual little girl things. I don't even remember how I spent my summers.
Innocently.
I hope.
What about extracurricular activities in high school?
Mm-hmm. No. I was really a very average student.
Did you have a favorite subject?
English, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Could you talk a little bit about how you and your family reacted to World War II, if any?
Yeah, well, my brothers all served. One was in Guadalcanal. Another was in California. I don't think he went overseas. The third, I don't remember where he was. He might have been too old to serve, the oldest, because he was almost 20 years older than I. He was just a year or two younger than my oldest sister. So I'm not sure that he even served, but the other two did.
Did the Holocaust touch your family at all?
No. To my knowledge, we had no relatives overseas that we were, you know, close to or even knew about.
Were you aware of what was going on?
Not really. I certainly wasn't. And if they were, I don't remember hearing it discussed.
Yeah, I did skip over the depression. How did the depression affect the family?
I don't know that it affected us that much either. We were certainly not invested in the stock market. We were poor. And
but Dad worked.
Dad was he had a shoe. Actually, he did have a shoe store. And the boys worked in the shoe store too, a little bit. And then he was a cobbler. So it's all very hazy. It really is. Nobody jumped out of windows. And as I say, we were not touched by it that I'm aware.
You had referred to a PC in the Navy. What is a PC?
Oh, you should have Bob here. Patrol craft.
Okay. And about your two daughters, how did you come up with the different spelling for Terry's name?
Well, she was. Everyone had been named after one of our parents, you know, all my nieces and nephews. And I don't know that we had, I do have a niece, Elaine, who was named after Esther, my mother. And I didn't like the name Esther, and I twisted it around, came up with Terry. And I don't know, Terry, everything, you know, that ended in E was spelled with a Y in my mind. And so it was T-E-R-R-Y.
Okay. And what are their careers today, your children?
Terry is working in a mental health, I guess it's an agency, in Colorado Springs, Colorado. She started out, she got her degree in education. She never did teach. And she went out west, and I think a girlfriend of hers out there was working in this agency and found a job for her. And she's still there. She's got to be the most senior employee. And Terry doesn't want to, she doesn't want to manage people. Terry likes doing what she wants to do or has to do, and she has a horse, and that's her great love. And she has a significant other, and I think it's the horse and then the significant other in her life. And she's very happy. And she has no aspirations for being an executive or anything. Wants to do what she's doing.
That's good. She's happy.
Mm-hmm. She is happy. Just, you know, very, very little demands. Not having children, there's no urgency to make a lot of money. That's fine.
Well, she's enjoying the horse and the significant
yes.
other.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your activities, what other organizations have you been active in besides NCJW?
I was somewhat active in ORT for a short while. I worked in their gift shop. And then I really don't remember the transition. Either they became less active.
No, you were covering it with your hand.
Oh, sorry. I think they eventually, I'm not sure whether they're still an organization called ORT anymore at all.
Yeah,
in Pittsburgh, there still is. Okay. I don't know.
Change their
name. I don't really know, but I don't hear too much about them. Mm-hmm. And they obviously sold the gift shop, or maybe they were renting and the building was sold, and so the gift shop closed. And then I joined NCJW. Bob's sister was always very active in NCJW, and she must have asked me to join, and I did. And I worked on, I worked somewhere in the publicity department. I would write notices for the Chronicle and that sort of thing. And then eventually I wrote the bulletin for a number of years. And I was Angel Ball chairman 1 year. I was community services vice president. I don't know, I had a lot of jobs in NCJW. And I was just at a annual meeting last night. And Lynn Jacob is our new president. And what struck me was that nobody had to be talked into taking the job. In my day, three of us, Ruth Lieber, who preceded me, and Barbara Feldman, who came after me, we all felt we weren't qualified, we couldn't do this, it wasn't our thing, and we were all really very humble and had to be convinced. And nobody had to convince Lynn or any of the previous presidents, I think, since Liz Feingold. Everybody felt very secure in themselves, you know, that they could do the job.
And you were president for how many
years? 2 years. Mm-hmm.
And you could do the job?
I did.
What was the actual name of Council House?
Council House, if I'm remembering the name correctly, was a social place for people coming. It was like a bridge between an institution, a mental institution, and their coming out into society. And it was sheltered. There was a director, and there were programs there, and there was a kitchen, I remember, and they could make snacks, do that sort of thing. I was not actually active. I was on the board, but I wasn't a direct volunteer. But I do remember we had Bob made an exhibit for them. I think I told you my husband was in the exhibit building business. Mm-hmm. And this exhibit was in a bank on Wood Street and Grant and Wood, or Fifth and Wood, I'm not sure which street it was. And it described what Council House was. And he's done that for Council for other, I think he did one, I don't know what year it was, but it talked about our overseas program. And it had, you know, visuals and copy, and these are panel. I'm sure you know what I'm referring to. So that was one way that he could participate too.
It brings back memories of other things for me. Getting to the Lifestyles program, could you just tell us a little bit more in terms of how participants were chosen? What were the discussions? What kind of discussions? Anything more that, you know, a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I think we tried to talk about what was happening with them in school and that sort of thing. But it took place at South Oakland Community Center on Lawn Street in South Oakland. There was a director, Phil, I want to say Pappas, but I'm not positive if that was his name. I think it was. And there was also, must have been a co-director or someone else that worked with them, John Van Zag and Terrence McGillicutt and this Jerry somebody or other. And Terry and Jerry worked together in the programming for the kids. It was a direct result of the juvenile justice study that was done by NCJW nationally, and we participated in locally. And this seemed to be a group that was at risk. Most of them were single parent families that they came from. They were borderline in school. I'm sure they had some run-ins with the truant officers and that sort of thing. Perhaps a little bit of petty thievery, I don't really know. And we would try to find jobs for them. And we had sort of social evenings with them. It was just a friendship type program where they could see what life was like outside their neighborhood. They were high school kids.
Mm-hmm. So they were there through high school?
Uh-huh.
And how many participants would you say? We
must have had, in and out, there must have been maybe 15.
Mm-hmm. When you say in and out, for your social or the discussion groups or anything, What was a typical number of people at one time?
Probably 12, 10, 12, uh-huh. I think so. And each one had, it was a one-to-one volunteer thing.
So you had your own?
I had my own, mm-hmm. And I remember her very well. If you asked me her name, I'm not so sure I remember, but it was a young girl, and she had gotten a golf scholarship. And she was very interested in science. And I think she eventually went to school in California. But she came, I remember that about 10 years after the program had started and was already over with, it wasn't over for 10 years, but there had been a good lapse. We got the kids together and we had a party at our house, and it was kind of a reunion thing, and it was fun.
I have no doubt. How did she get a golf scholarship? What was the criteria?
Golf.
What was the criteria?
Probably her grades.
So she, her grades improved.
Yes.
Did she?
Yeah. I can't take, I don't know that the program can take credit for that or not, but, because we didn't do any real help with homework.
No, but maybe because you helped in their personal lives.
Perhaps.
That made it easier to want more
mm-hmm.
for each goal. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Dickman, on the programs that you're developing now, the Living Judaism History
mm-hmm.
and the Jews in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
What is the aim of each of these programs that you're developing?
Well, they're number one, it's to showcase our oral history, which is still kind of a well kept secret from the community. We wanted to use our material in a way that people would learn from it. So we were only going to do the one course, and when we discussed it with Rabbi Schiff, he thought that the history of Pittsburgh would be more like it. I mean, he just thought that our material lent itself more to the history of Pittsburgh. didn't sound sexy enough, really. We wanted to do, I think we were trying to show that there are all kinds of ways of being Jews. And I mean, the history was fine, but you could read about that, really. But anyway, he persisted, and we did develop that course, and we're still working on the second course, the Living Judaism, you know, in quotes, whatever that may turn out to be.
And we're caught up, and it's time to continue. So if we can continue with the public housing call for action?
Yeah.
Okay.
I noticed on your guideline you have some dates, and you have women in urban crisis. Did I see that? No.
No.
What did I see?
Yes, here it is. You're right here.
Right. And that was 1970? Delegate to Women in Urban Crisis. Right. Now that was a program that developed... When was the Vietnam War?
Like 68.
Well, I think, as I said, it was kind of after all the rioting in Watts. And we were pretty conscious of race relations. And Women in Urban Crisis, which was not a program of NCJW, but it was, we were delegates, and I was the delegate. And the program Call for Action, which focused on housing at that time, was brought to Women in Urban Crisis by NCJW. And Ruth Poindexter, an African-American woman, and I were the chairman. And we organized this Call for Action with KDKA. And they were very kind and gave us space to, you know, to not broadcast from, because to man the phones, because this was not on the air. Although Wayne Van Dyne would eventually pick a call that he thought was interesting, and they would showcase it on the radio and tell how they were instrumental in solving it. So that was how they publicized it.
But it was publicized so people knew when to call in.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But their calls weren't on the air. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of NCJW women, as well as Women in Urban Crisis women.
And how long had you participated in that?
It was probably around 2 or 3 years. I had a short attention span.
I just wanted to give your attention to a lot
right,
of people.
Right, right.
And then you became Vice President of Community Service.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to go right down this list.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So you already have the dates when I was all these various things. And, right, I think... 1970, if I had my phone book, I'd know who was president at that time, because that probably determined why I was a vice president. I obviously knew the president, and she was looking for, you know, candidates for these various slots. Anyway, I really have enjoyed all my activities with NCJW, and I've learned an awful lot.
So you've gained
much more than I've given.
Is there a specific aspect of it that...
The women. I think the women are extremely, at least in my time, and I'm sure they are now, I just don't know the young women now, but they were extremely dedicated, extremely bright, and very... they got things done, and I was in awe of that.
You were part of that. You were director, I see.
Yeah, but that's an honorary thing almost after you're a president.
Okay, and as you said, you were coordinator and editor of the newsletter.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that a lot. I like to write. And I do expository writing, nothing creative, but I like to do that. And then that gave me a better feel for the organization, too, because I was able to write, you know, what all the different departments were doing.
You were president.
Mm-hmm.
No comment on that?
As I say, it was... And I'm really... Well, I'm not going to... All right.
No,
I was president.
It's
go
just
ahead.
Between the three of us.
Just be, no, of course not. No, but I think we were the last of the shrinking violets.
And
one of the programs that we did develop, and again, I don't remember how long it lasted, but it seemed to serve a purpose at the time, was single women in midlife. And these were mostly divorced and widowed women who were looking for a support group. And Marla Perlman was the one that came to us and asked if we couldn't develop something. And we did, and she chaired it.
What was the name of that again?
Single Women in Midlife, SWIM.
Is that still active?
No. Mm-mm, not really. And they had their own programming. A lot of it were was some of it was travel, some of it was speakers, some of it was just, you know, talk and helping one another through divorce, through widowhood. And I guess, I don't know, maybe they didn't get any new people or new blood, but that lasted for about 4 years, I think. I seem to have better records of how these things, or at least recollections of how they start and not how they end or why they end.
Well, probably because you are one of the...
The initiators.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so.
Perhaps.
Could you tell us a little bit about Friends Indeed?
Well, that was another program that was a result of juvenile justice, the study. And that one had a home. It was, what do they call it?
A halfway house type of?
Somewhat of a halfway house, yeah, mm-hmm. Where the girls lived. And we supported... an executive director, you know, who lived, she did live in the house. Mm-hmm. And there, it was manned or womaned all day long, you know, so we had shifts and people. Why am I having such a block of what they did? I mean, they were in charge of the girls. They supervised them. And it was, I guess it was a somewhat of a secure type of residence. It was in Mount Lebanon, I know.
Were these girls who were in trouble prior?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've come out of juvenile homes?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before they went where afterwards? When after they left,
they were finishing their detention, I guess.
Okay. So this is before they were allowed to go out on their own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any idea how many girls came through there? And what was the average stay?
Yeah. I can't remember.
Okay.
But we did have a lot of volunteer activity with it, and that too had was a one-to-one type of mentoring or whatever you want to call it thing. And then there would be, I remember every year there was a party for the volunteers and their kids, and these volunteers would see them outside of the home, you know, they would take them places and do things with them.
Now, were these girls going to school?
They did go to school where they in the community they lived, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you remember the average day of any of the girls? And was it a one-on-one with each girl?
The volunteer in each girl, yes. Mm-hmm. Seems to me it was just a couple of years before they were on their own. I should say they were emancipated. That's, I think, the expression they use. So they probably were there until they were 18. Mm-hmm. But they came out at different